Kadian K Community Access Radio in Carbondale, Colorado, in the United States. This is program number 63 of the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. When blind people go places, we don't experience them like our sighted friends. We don't see beautiful mountains or romantic sunsets. The goal of this program is to identify and even create experiences that are more meaningful or just more fun for us and our sighted traveling companions. Frequently, as people lose their eyesight, they become more and more isolated. The Tactile Traveler hopes to empower people not only to go literally around the world, but around the block to new adventures in their lives. Blind ranges from people who are visually impaired no longer allow them to lead a normal life, to people like me who are totally blind, to sighted parents who have a blind child, to blind parents who have sighted children, blind parents with blind children, and people of all ages, interests, and physical abilities. On today's program, blind sailing and how blind people flirt. On July 27, 1983, Hank Decker stepped into a sailboat sloop, the Dark Star, for a solo trip from San Francisco, California, to Honolulu, Hawaii. The 48-year-old adventurer, who was 98% blind, with the help of a braille compass and navigational charts and a voice navigational system, successfully arrived in Honolulu 25 days and about 2,500 miles later, while only drifting 20 miles off course. Decker said he did it to encourage other handicapped people to take on challenges. I also want people in business and industry to say, if that guy can navigate within 20 miles over 2,500 miles, then handicapped people can do something for us, said Decker. And in August 28, 1983, United Press International article. 3 years later, he did it again, coming in third in a race against sighted competitors. Decker's distances are unusual, but blind people sailing solo and part of blind and blind and sighted crews is happening all over the world. One man who sailed many parts of the world is 45-year-old software engineer is Chris Sheppy from Fort Myers, Florida. He began sailing at 11 when his family bought a sailboat.
I just love being on the water and the feeling of the wind and the sails and moving through the water, the sounds of the water, the motions of the boat, real relaxing or racing. It's the whole, like, fun of the game, going out there trying to do your best and win, that I love. And another thing is I can go out and I can helm or drive a sailboat. I can't drive a car. It gives me the opportunity to do things that I wouldn't be able to not on the water.
Chris said even though he sailed as part of a crew when he was a little kid, the first time he sailed solo was a little scary.
A little bit, but I had coaches I was working with that were encouraging, and they knew my abilities and what I could do and pushed me along. And once I'd done it a couple of times, it became first nature and really enjoyable.
Chris has a tiny bit of useful vision.
Genital amaurosis. Lost my peripheral vision, so it's pretty much like looking through a little pinhole.
Chris says he doesn't let his blindness interfere with what he sails.
I've done a lot of different kinds of sailing. So yeah, a lot of a lot of different types, all different types of boats, from little 8-footers all the way up 65-footer, from just out for an afternoon sail to long distance, multiple day sail down to the Caribbean. I've done racing, both fleet racing, which is many boats at one time, and match racing, where you're racing against one other boat at a time.
Chris says, even though there are blind sailors all over the world, people are still surprised to see sailors who can't see.
It's definitely not as common as it could be. There's quite a few groups, and, you know, there's nationals and worlds and stuff like that. You know, and then there's para sailing, all disabilities. A lot of people have never seen it, and they can't believe that you're sailing and blind. And then when they see race against them, in many cases beat them, they are like, wow, that's really neat. I can't believe it. I've done position on the foredeck of a boat, putting spinnaker pole up, and I've had people say they can't believe I do it, because they think that's something that requires a large amount of sight, or they rely on it, but there's definitely technique that I've learned.
Chris says for some sailing categories, racers have to wear blindfolds, even if they're totally blind, to give everyone an equal chance. He says in some races, they have to be total blackout devices like nightshades. In other races, they can just cover sunglasses with electrical tape.
I tend to go with the sunglasses, so I don't want to take away spots where I can feel the wind on my face.
Across the country in San Francisco is accountant and attorney Walter Raineri. He lost his sight to retinitis pigmentosa 20 years ago. Now at 65, he can tell if it's light or dark out and can see some shadows, which is no help when he's sailing.
Kind of on a lark, a sailing opportunity on San Francisco Bay with few sighted sailors who wanted to provide experiences for the visually impaired. And that experience was wonderful. It is freeing to be on the helm of a boat in a water where there is just the wind power you around, and understanding the fundamentals of sailing and realizing that I could do it blind was an invigorating experience for me, one that I pursued to the point of going now to many, many world championship events and representing the United States in all of them.
Match racing is when only two boats race against each other on a short designated course by floating markers called buoys. When blind sailors are racing, those buoys are modified.
How, you ask? Three blind people find themselves in a boat on a body of water. How do they get around? Well, there are three buoys on the water that make noise. There's a port buoy on the left side of the course. There's a starboard buoy on the right side of the course. And there's a windward buoy that is upwind. Race courses for sailboats, they always start with you going against the wind. And because you cannot sail directly against the wind, you have to kind of zigzag back and forth. It's called tacking. Tacking to the right, tacking to the left. Now, there's another boat in a match racing competition. And that other boat's job is to make your life miserable, because they're trying to win, you're trying to win. Knowing where that other boat is kind of important. And each boat has a sound emitter on it. Sound emitter makes two different kinds of sounds. It's called port tacking or starboard tacking, to get yourself up the race course, to get around the buoys.
Both Chris and Walter say they feel safer sailing by themselves than dealing with traffic and busy intersections on land.
Something I would share with anyone listening to this program is, you might think you'd never go out sailing. Hey, I'm blind. I can't see. I can't do that. If you think it's too hard, too difficult, too complicated, I'm here to tell you, add a little bit of courage, get on a sailboat, experience what you can do with a crew around you, and you'd be amazed at how liberating it can feel and how you can control this multi-ton vehicle cruising through the water all by yourself with a little help from your friends.
If you would like to see what it's like experiencing sailing, even if you can't see, go to ussailing.org or Blind Sailing International at blindsailinginternational.com. Chris Danielson, Lizbeth Mullinex from the Fort Myers Beach Public Library and the Denver Public Library Reference Department helped with this story. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. The following story first aired on program number 45 on September 5th, 2023. According to Spotify, it was the most listened to story in the history of The Tactile Traveler. About 233% more listeners than any other story. It's how blind people flirt. I was standing in line in the Student Union cafeteria in college when the woman in front of me was singing to herself. I tapped her on the shoulder and said, "Can I put in a request?" The song was Ruby Dooby Doo. She didn't know it, but I married her anyway. I didn't think about it at the time, but what I was doing was flirting.
Flirting is important because it's a way of connecting with people and showing interest in them.
That's blind psychologist Jim Stokes, Ph.D.
It's a way of showing that you want to engage someone in a playful manner to attract their attention.
Penn Street is the outreach and development director for the Audio Information Network of Colorado. She's blind as a result of being bitten by a rattlesnake at age 9. But it took about 20 years between the time she was bitten and when she became blind enough to affect her life.
Attacked by a rattlesnake, and the venom caused what's called Stevens-Johnson syndrome, and which attacks all of the soft tissue in your body. And so over time, I lost more and more vision.
Penn lost her sight slowly and is still losing it. And it affected how she flirted.
Oh, completely. For one, I can't see somebody across the room. The whole visual thing changed for me. It went from being attracted to somebody visually first, which is the way it was, especially as a teenager. I feel like the media taught me that everything was visual. What kind, you know, what does their hair look like? What are they wearing? What brands of clothing are they wearing? Or what kind of car are they driving? It was very visual to me. And then, of course, if I got to know them and I still didn't like them, then, you know, it wouldn't go much further. But I felt like I gave people a chance just off of the visual. And then when I lost my vision, that was completely taken away. And I couldn't trust visually. And so I had to rely on other things. For one, I didn't really flirt that much at all because I had to wait until they came up to me. And even if I had friends that wanted to introduce me to somebody, it was extremely awkward. And I felt more self-conscious about myself. I was very young when I was, well, still am, thin, and I'm tall. I'm 5'9". I've always had been very athletic. So I always felt like I had a flattering figure and was fit. And so I felt like I was attractive, but when I could see, but when I lost my vision, I didn't trust that I was still visually attractive. And so it really changed on both levels, me flirting, but also if somebody was flirting with me, it didn't seem as obvious. So like, so many times guys would supposedly be flirting with me and I just thought they wanted to have a conversation. And my girlfriends would say, "Oh my gosh, he was totally hitting on you." And I was like, "He was?" I became clueless of the flirting. Well, when I met now my husband, it really did change. But it took a long time for me to trust how I felt towards him and how he was treating me, that I trusted that he actually found that I was attractive and he didn't just feel sorry for me or take me on as his pet project. Oh, and I also want to say you're never too old to flirt. Even if you're flirting with your husband of 35 years, flirting never, ever gets old.
Ida Barami is a 26-year-old software engineer.
I have retinitis pigmentosa, so I was always legally blind, but I lost the majority of my vision at age 18.
Ida doesn't know many blind guys, so she usually dates sighted men.
And the times that I've dated sighted guys will be like, oh, I just realized that I'm flirting a lot with you right now, with my eyes and my body language, or I'm winking at you or smiling at you, and I just realized that's not going to work. So oftentimes, because I'm making eye contact, because I'm, you know, I get a lot of comments saying I look like I can see, they forget that I can't see, and they will, you know, do the things that they would normally do. They'll point, they'll wink, they'll, you know, look at me a certain way. And then realize after the fact, when I'm not responding, realize that they need to figure out a different way, be more verbal instead of nonverbal. So it's a lot of trial and error. I think people need a time to adjust or think of different ways.
Ida says, be flexible.
I say that. I think sometimes we think that there's one way to flirt. And we feel, at least I in the past, have felt self-conscious that, you know, I can't keep eye contact or I can't do the nonverbal communication, right? I was scared that nobody would want to date me or that, you know, I'd have trouble. But I'd say as long as you're open and honest and a good person, it'll all work itself out in my experience. So just keep being yourself. I know as cheesy as it sounds, but it is really good advice. Just be yourself. Be confident in who you are. Never try to hide your disability. And people will feed off that energy and be attracted to that, I think. So there's not just one way to do things.
Zach Parks is a licensed massage therapist in Vail, Colorado.
I would say blindness is just a physical thing. It doesn't define who I am. And like, be outgoing and upfront and honest and cheery with people, and it changes a lot of things.
Zach figured out how to make sighted people comfortable when flirting.
I think that when it comes to flirting, I don't feel like I'm great at it, but something that I've noticed is a lot of people are curious with blindness, but are afraid to be upfront and ask about it. So that's a good way to start a conversation, aka flirt with someone, is be the icebreaker with the blindness.
Zach said that's how he met his girlfriend.
We were definitely out with a bunch of friends, and she told me that she noticed me and was afraid to approach me. And I bumped into her a few different times because that's what happens. And I started the conversation, and then after that, we started hanging out more and contacting each other. And then I would say a few months after that, we became boyfriend and girlfriend and started dating. Been dating now off and on for several years.
Deborah Leiby lives in a London suburb.
It's a hereditary, and I don't know, it's just genes, inherited genes from my ancestors, I believe. I have a brother who's also with the same condition, but not as severe as mine. There's four of us children, and the youngest and the oldest has it. I'm the oldest of four, and the youngest has it, and the two in the middle doesn't have it. It's called blue cone dystrophy. I'm colorblind, I'm lens sensitive to light, I have to wear dark glasses all the time, and I'm very short-sighted.
Deborah says because of her blindness, she doesn't realize when someone's flirting with her.
I don't know. They'd have to blatantly. I don't know if Cardi told you I've got a new romance, and it was one of his trips away. He took us to Blackpool. He took us to Blackpool week holiday, and I met one of the other guys there, the other visually impaired that I'd never met before. And I think he was flirting with me quite badly, but I didn't notice it until he took me to his room, and then I realized he liked me. But before then, he asked me to dance. He bought me a drink. But I still didn't pick up on it. I'm 59 years old. I didn't think anybody was going to be flirting with me.
Deborah is assertive.
I'm very
I'm kind and generous. If there was a bloke I like, a bloke means a man. If there was a bloke I like, I would probably say, do you fancy a coffee? If he was in a group, I don't think I would have said that if he was on his own.
I'm heterosexual, by the way.
She says she flirts both with men and women in the same way.
Not afraid to say, oh, buy the first round. Some people seem to be, you know, a bit tight, what we call, and don't want to buy a round or shirt buying a coffee. I'm not like that. I thought, you know, I always dive in. That's even if I don't fancy somebody, but it's just if I walk into a room and I sit at a table with people, as long as I know them, we're in the same group, I'll say, oh, if I get out for a drink, I'll say, oh, what are you having? And if there are five people on the table, I ask everybody what you're having. I just hope they don't have anything too expensive and that I've got enough money on my card to pay for it.
There are two ways blind people flirt. First, with sighted people and with blind people. Blind psychologist Dr. Jim Stokes.
If a sighted person wants to flirt with a blind person, that makes it easy for the blind person, certainly, because then apparent to them that the other person is interested in them. So there's no wondering about that. And it makes it much easier for the blind person to be aware of sort of, oh, this person kind of likes me. They're showing interest in me in a playful way.
Dr. Stokes says blind people flirting with blind people has the potential to be less superficial.
Some ways can be more interesting to the other person because it's not about their physical appearance and is more, can be more a different level of interest in them because of more of who they are or what they do or what they say.
Dr. Stokes says for blind people to start flirting with blind people, they have to physically be close to each other.
Some familiarity helps, but just also being put in a position where you are literally sitting next to someone or having to wait in line with someone or somewhere where their physical proximity is already there. And then people start talking, and then if there's interest, then some flirting may occur.
Flirting doesn't have to be romantic or potentially romantic. My last wife used to flirt with my father, and he loved it.
In some instances, flirting is just a playful way of interacting with someone. It's a way of acting like you're romantically interested when it's obvious that that's not the case. Maybe because of extreme age differences or the nature of the relationship that you have with that person. It's just a playful way of interacting. But it doesn't have to be showing true romantic interest.
Like everyone else, Dr. Stokes says there was a whole lot of flirting with his girlfriend and his relationship, too.
We met online and a little bit of messaging, but then quickly got to wanting to have a phone conversation. And then once we did, there was definite flirting involved and just playfulness and showing interest in an amusing way. You know, that's just the start of so many relationships. It's just a fun way to get to know someone and to pique their interest in a very playful way. Because people like to laugh and have fun. And when other people make you feel good or happy, then that's attractive.
Leah Stone and Party Gill helped with this story. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Why, it's my talking scale, reminding us that we'd like you to weigh in on how we're doing. Please let us know by sending an email to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. We spell traveler the American way, with one L. We'd also like to hear your story ideas from all over the world. Please send us an email with story ideas in the subject line to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. Transcripts of this program are also available for our deaf listeners by searching The Tactile Traveler in any search engine. This program is also being broadcast on AfterSight, formerly the Audio Information Network of Colorado, and audio information networks in additional states. It's also available by typing the Tactile Traveler into any search engine, and available wherever you get podcasts, and by asking your smart speaker to play the podcast, the Tactile Traveler. We'd like to thank the following people who helped make today's program possible. Be My Eyes Microsoft Accessibility Tech Support, Apple Accessibility Tech Support, Leslie Steffen, Pat Conero, Lorraine Hutchinson, Debbie O'Leary, Sarah Williams, Sophia Williams, Kristen Cato, Kaylee Romero, and Raleigh Burley. This has been the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. This has been a production of KDNK Community Access Radio, Carbondale, Colorado.